Have you got any crap online? Because you start to have, you know, quite a few views on your videos. Well, how's the maelstrom of
Every day,
hate?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot
it's
of
the
hate.
Internet, man.
Right, right.
Yeah, I get, I mean, nothing too bad. It's not like threats or anything like that, but I just get hateful comments and hateful private messages, and my inbox is always full of hateful stuff. And I had one guy who, like, followed me. What happened to him? If he's listening to this, I want you to come back and continue your saga of back and forth. Because there's one guy who was just so hateful and just kept messaging me. But anyway, yeah.
And what specifically was that? Do you remember what that was about?
Oh, it was just totally irrational. It was just like some troll online. But and I still get those, and I mostly ignore them now. It was when I was kind of coming up, and it's fun for me to respond to it.
Right.
Not in a hateful way. I did it the opposite. I was like extra nice to him, and I think that made him even more upset.
Okay, welcome to the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 133. Really happy to have our guest on today. On the show, today we're going to talk to a NorCal stalwart in the Pro 12 cycling scene, and also a pretty good producer of cycling videos. You may have seen those. We'll get into those as well. You might best know this guy for taking crap while sitting in on the break, also calling out some people. But my favorite was the repatriation of the Street Fighter going to his video on the Bull Bay Hill Climb last year and beating Phil Guymon. He's also a pretty damn good bike racer. Welcome to the show, Jeff Linder. How you doing?
Hey, good. Thanks, Tyler. Good to be on.
Yeah, so let's kind of go about your origination story. Who are you, and how did you get into cycling? And I'll just preface it by saying, you know, there's people out there. We're in the U.S., and, you know, there's baseball, basketball, and everything. Cycling's not a proficient sport that everyone just gravitates to. So how did you get involved in that?
It's a kind of funny story, actually. I don't have any family members who are into the sport or anything like that. So I know a lot of people get into the sport that way. And I was kind of a late adopter to the sport. So I tried to be a competitive runner, but I am not cut out to be a competitive runner. I think I had maybe some talent, like endurance-wise, but I just don't have the joints. My knees are bad. And what I ended up doing is training too hard, getting injured, and then I would ride my bike to stay fit while I had, you know, some problem with my knee or problem with my hip, my ankle, whatever it was. And one thing led to another, and then I'm doing group rides. And I have to credit Phil Mooney, who is also a Davis grad, also a geologist. And he kind of got me into the sport. He was one of the stars on the Aggie cycling team back in its heyday. And I went out with him thinking, well, I'm fast runner, you know. I could probably be a fast cyclist, right? I was totally wrong. So, like, I got dropped by him a bunch of times, fell in love with the sport. And by the time I graduated Davis, I started doing the early birds and just totally fell in love with the sport. And, God, haven't given up since.
How old were you when you started taking up cycling then?
So, like, recreationally, when I was younger, I did the BMX thing when I was a kid. But it wasn't until I was like 22 is when I did the early birds, and that's when I really discovered like competitive road cycling. And and yeah, 22, and so that was 11 years ago now. So
wow, yeah. So did you get involved with the, you know, the Tour de France and seeing that kind of scene? Did that draw you in at all? I know that was kind of during some of the heyday there, or thereafter.
I mean, once I became a cyclist, I started following pro cycling. And once I was an athlete myself in the sport, but before then, no, not really. I mean, of course, I knew the name, it's a household name, and I knew of the Tour de France, but like, I didn't understand. I was one of those guys, right, that was like, I don't get it. Like, the fastest guy just is going to win the race, right? I didn't know this distinction between climber, sprinter, whatever. To me, it was like, well, the guy that crosses the line first, like, he's the fastest guy. So it's like, Mark Cavendish is the strongest. You know, why isn't he winning the Tour de France?
Right. And you have those people, you know, at work, if you're ever describing cycling, you know, they don't understand that group dynamic. Why doesn't he just take off?
Yeah.
Well, it's a little tougher.
I get asked all the time, like, why don't you race the Tour of California? That's going on right now. Are you in that? I'm like, right. I'm not that fast.
Maybe someday. So you mentioned geologist. So I didn't know what you did. Is that what you went to school for?
Yeah.
Okay. So my guess for you was something along the lines of engineering, something like that, just for the way you broke down your videos, kind of your analytical thinking. Is that kind of your gig?
I'm a geologist, and I really have this like analytical part of my brain, and I think that definitely bleeds over into the sport of cycling and the way I produce my videos, because they come from this very analytical approach. And that wasn't like my intention. I didn't set about to have this analytical approach, but that's just the way, that's just me. Like, right. that's not me putting on an act or anything like that. So that's just the way I like to break down the sport. And that's what's going on in my head when I'm in the race, when I'm thinking about the race after. And then nowadays when I'm looking at other people's videos that they sent me, their footage, and that's just like, I just have this analytical part of my brain that turns on.
Well, I see you're wearing the Trainer Road shirt there, and I heard your podcast with them. It was really good.
Oh, thanks.
And it was interesting. Yeah. And it was interesting, though, to, you know, that's a different type of thing. We're talking about training, and they're specifically asking you about, you know, as an example, how do you know when to take the wind and to come out? And, you know, while you are this analytical mind and everything is a checkbox in a sense, I mean, so much of that sprinting really is feel and being in the moment and understanding that. How do you try to project that to people out there in your videos of like how to race properly, yet when you've got this checklist mind?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, you can only plan so much. And I talk about this on my channel too. You can only plan so much, and you can pre-ride the course and say, okay, this mailbox, this is the spot I want to go. But things don't go to plan in a bike race. You know this. And anybody who's raced a bike, they know this too. You can plan as much as you want, and you can talk about a strategy, and you can meet up with your teammates, but you really just have to see that moment and you have to experience it. And that's why I think practice races and just experience in general, like racing for a number of years, you really start to identify that moment, because you might have this idea in mind, but if everyone's really tired, maybe you're gonna launch your sprint 50 meters later. Or if there's the wind changes, if the weather changes, if there's still people in the race that you weren't expecting to still be in the race, that's gonna totally change up your game plan. So you have to always be willing to adapt, and experience is trumps everything else. So I would say just being able to, like, seeing that is the best way.
So okay, so you've got your cycling channel. When did you start that? About what period of?
Well, so like the channel's been, I was actually surprised by it the other day. The channel's been around since like 2015 or 2016. I can't remember. Yeah. Maybe 2016. So it's been there for a long time. But for the longest time, I was just one of those guys that just posted like raw footage, you know, 60 minute crit. Nobody wants to watch it.
No commentary, just straight.
Just there it is. And then you can hear the rattling of the GoPro. And then it kind of shifted a little bit where I had things I wanted to say in the video. And the main idea at first was to share it with, you know, some friends and some teammates, and we could kind of relive the experience. And that still is what drives me today. It's really fun for me to relive the race. It's almost, you get that feeling again, you know, that, that adrenaline rush a little bit again when you're watching the video.
Have you ever watched one of these videos that you're in and you're kind of more, the nerves are more rewatching it, like, well, I'm taking this corner, than when you are in the moment?
So it's usually the opposite for me. Usually I'm like, oh, that was so insane right after the race. That was crazy. You know, I lost by 2 inches, and you go back, it's like a bike length, or, you know, it wasn't as close as you thought or something like that.
Now, the good thing that I've seen, though, like for me, I've been filming some of these myself and doing them, is you can be a little more honest about what actually took place, because sometimes you're exactly what you're saying. Oh, it was close, or, oh man, I was, you know, on the break for this guy and I was doing, and then you go back, really so much, or maybe it was more impressive. So who knows?
Yeah, it changes, you know? And now that I've seen the videos for my races, I've seen quite a few of them. I've produced a lot of videos. It's you have a more accurate representation of what happened when you finish the race, and I know what to expect in the video.
And I think that's good. If you're using any of those for going back to look at, you know, how the race was, or to break down your own racing, it's better to have the actual what took place than just your perception of it.
So. Yeah, for sure.
Have you got any crap online? Because you start to have, you know, quite a few views on your videos. how's the maelstrom of
every day?
Hate?
Yeah,
yeah. It's a lot
it's
of
the
hate.
Internet, man.
Right.
Yeah, I get I mean, nothing too bad. It's not like threats or anything like that. But I just get hateful comments and hateful private messages, and my inbox is always full of hateful stuff. And I had one guy who like followed me. What happened to him? If he's listening to this, I want you to come back and continue your saga of back and forth. Because there's one guy who was just so hateful and just kept messaging me. But anyway, yeah,
what specifically was that? Do you remember what that was about?
Oh, it was just totally irrational. It was just like some troll online. But and I still get those, and I mostly ignore them now. It was when I was kind of coming up, and it's fun for me to respond to it.
Right.
Not in a hateful way. I did it the opposite. I was like extra nice to him, and I think that made him even more upset.
Yes, that does. When you're like, thank you for your comments, yeah, which I try to do. You know, I put out a thing the other day about Chris Froome, and I don't know if you heard about, you know, he had a wreck.
Yeah, yeah, I heard about it.
And now people are saying that it's fake. He faked his crash. I don't know if you've heard this controversy.
No, I haven't.
But it is amazing what comes out of the woodwork. I did a little video kind of debunking that. People take this, they're more interested in that whole saga than anything else. It's interesting. So I don't know.
I'm sure you got a lot of hate for that.
You get some. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you specifically, let's go into some of your hate filled videos that you've produced, Jeff. So, one of them, recently was at Golden State with, you got in the break. And let's tell everybody, who do you race for? In case anybody doesn't know, you're from NorCal, you're a Cat One. Who do you race for? And give us a breakdown of your team.
Oh, sure. Tarun Elite. It's under the Squadra SF Club. And we're just a bunch of Cat Ones, and we're all weekend warriors. We're all working men. None of us do it for full time, but we just try to be as competitive as possible, and we just try to dominate the local scene. So there's what, 8 of us, and yeah, we have a good mix. It's like every year we just have more talent coming on, and we're growing, and we have a lot of really strong young guys who are really promising. They're already super fast, and they're only going to get faster. So I'm really excited to be on this team for another year.
Yeah, okay. I was going to talk about Golden State, but I'm gonna back up, because the rumor is that you guys only take Cat Ones. Is that the truth to this? There was a little video dispute out there earlier in the year.
No. I mean, we happen to be actually we don't. We're not all Cat One. So no, that's not like a strict prerequisite. Usually, being Cat One means that you're pretty good at racing your bike because you've been successful in the P1-2 field.
Right.
But no, all we look for is people who drive with us. You know, I mean, you might be the best climber or the best time trialist or something like that. But if that's not what we're looking for on our team, then you're not going to be on the team. I mean, we just look like a lot of it is our strengths have to complement each other, you know? So that's what we look for on our team.
Bobby Terra, Robert Terra, I don't know how he goes on that. He had raced with us several years ago. And one thing I knew about him was he had a real good cycling mind. And you guys have him this year. It looks like a great addition. He's always in the break or trying to be in the break. And I think that's been a good addition. Any comments here and there on that one?
Oh, no, that dude's so strong. I mean, there's a reason he joined our team. I was in like 5 breakaways with him last year, 5 successful breakaways with him last year, maybe even more. And and I think you nailed it. He just knows how to race his bike really well. Every time, you know, it's like that moment in a race where every time you're like, say I just got back, pulled back from a break, and then the counter goes and you're like, oh my God, I can't go again. It's like Bobby every time is going to be on that. And that's what we needed at the time. And that's why it was like kind of a no brainer when we learned that he was looking for a team. We reached out to him because we were looking for that type of rider, and he fit the bill, and he did not disappoint. He's even faster this year than he was last year.
Yeah, he's had a really good year. And that, okay, so you are predominantly a sprinter, would you say? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So things like this, as a sprinter, especially with a lot of the crit scene you have here, if you don't have a team that can just get up there, and Bobby's one that can stick those brakes, if you don't have someone like that, you're going to really reduce your chances of winning, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it comes back to what I was saying earlier. I mean, like if my strength is sprinting and Bobby's strength is breakaway, we can play off each other because people aren't going to want Bobby to get away in a breakaway because that's what he's really good at. And people aren't going to want to just drag me up to the break if Bobby's in it because I'm a sprinter and I just want to be lazy and sit in the field and wait for the field sprint. So they're in the they're in trouble. You know, I mean, that's a powerful combination. So that's how we try to craft our squad is we get ourselves in race winning positions in every single race. We never try to put ourselves in a situation where we're like scrambling and panicking and chasing down a breakaway because we missed it. So we always try to bring the right mix of riders where we can have everything covered.
So I don't see your team as being like a bunch of superstars, but yet you guys are always in the mix and maybe you are a bunch of superstars. I'm misreading this, but you're always in the, and I think it's exactly what you're saying. You have enough guys out there that cover things and then you're getting in the breaks and you're setting yourself up or you can finish it off as well. We'll talk some more about that, but I want to not deviate too far. Golden State race series. It's a 2-day, has a crit the first day, has a circuit race the next day. It's an omnium. So first day you have a teammate out there that does fairly well. I think he won.
Christopher.
Okay. And then the next day comes in. So this is always an interesting thing because there's riders that didn't race the first day that are in the second day. You show up in the second day and kind of walk us through what happened. And I'm only saying this because that was a video. I think probably got a bunch of views as well. But here in our NorCal scene,
it was kind of controversial, wasn't it?
Right. And so I think it's great. Let's talk about it. Let's stir up the controversy and relive it some more.
I already did a lot of stirring up the controversy, but I like talking about it. So let's try it again.
That's the question I was getting, because there was one earlier from Land Park where you called out the Cliff Bar guy.
Yeah.
So I know you get hate, like you said, but did you get from, you know, whether it's chat or as a JD that was in that, or
yeah,
the Cliff Bar guys, did you get specific comments to you from them?
No. So, okay. No, the hate is irrational internet hate. Let me backtrack and just be very clear on that. The hate I get is just like your run-of-the-mill like YouTube hate that is just from the ether, from the anonymous YouTube commenter. It's not people from NCNCA. And like 95-98% of the comments I get are like, you helped me out racing. And those are the ones I love, by the way.
Right.
You helped me out. I won my first crit, yada, yada, yada. I get a lot of really positive encouragement. But as for Golden State, yeah, we had the leader's jersey on the first day through Christopher. He won from a late race break, and we wanted to win the overall. It's an omnium. It's a 2-day omnium, and so the following day, I showed up. I wasn't there the first day, but I showed up in support of Christopher retaining that leader's jersey, and I knew it would be very difficult. And I also identified the people who were second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever on the omnium. So the first thing that we said, it kind of goes without saying, but it's like, okay, well, don't work in a breakaway if second, third, fourth, fifth, or whatever are with you in the breakaway, because then for obvious reasons you're gonna lose the overall. And I found myself in a break with second, third, fourth, and fifth on the omnium. So it's like, well, I am not doing any work and they're not gonna expect me to do any work, right? That's kind of a no-brainer. And then they expected me to do work. So it, for good or for bad, I'm honest on my channel and my analysis, and I tell it like it is. So in this case, they really wanted me to do work, and I stand by my statement that I wasn't planning on doing work. And by the way, if the positions were reversed, I wouldn't have had any expectation that they do work in that situation.
Right.
And I could, by the way, I could have I could have been a pest and really made their life difficult, and I totally would have been in the rules, and I could have infiltrated the pace line and slowed it down and let gaps open up. I don't like that style of racing, so I didn't do that, but I totally could have. So, I sat at the back. You saw the video. I sat at the back, and, on occasion I pulled through and I just took a little baby pull at the front, but that's racing. I mean, there shouldn't have been, I think there's a lot of talk because they try to guilt you into taking a pull, but, sure. I've been racing for long enough that doesn't work on me anymore.
Well, and that's a prime example of what you've got to be confident in your strategy, and I see that playing out on a lot of your videos. You're very set into, hey, this is, you know, first of all, we have team goals, and then in the moment you're calling out things you're doing. Maybe it was selective editing with the the Golden State. I don't think so, as far as chat like yelling at you, but I think that's, you know, you're set to, here's what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to get bullied into a situation because it's best for your team, and people don't always know that, you know, we race as teams, yeah. Things so
yeah. And then there were some comments that that had some merit, like there were comments like, hey, at the top of the analysis you said you weren't racing for yourself, you're racing for your teammates, so why didn't you drop back and tow the brake back? And Yeah, fair enough comment. Before the race, Christopher said, hey, I'm trying to win the overall. Let's support that as a primary goal. But if you have a shot at winning the stage, like if you're in the breakaway, don't give up your chances for the stage win. So we were very clear as a team on what our expectations were and what our goals were. And it was like very not controversial at the time. And then about halfway through the race, I was like, oh, I'm poking a hornet's nest, you know, and I knew it was going to be a thing. And I still uploaded the video because I'd like to tell it like it is. And, right. And like I said in my video, I mean, after the race, Matt and I and Timmy and I, we all were laughing and sharing jokes and stuff. And it's a hard thing to describe to people. But, you know, your heart rate's jacked and you're competitive and all of us are competitive. And for 60 minutes a week, we're sworn enemies and then we're buddies moments after. So that's why I love this community and I love this sport.
Right. And as you said, you're weekend warriors in a sense. I mean, you know, you're racing a different than just a lot of the Cat Fives. So obviously, you know, it's very competitive, but you still have a day job. You know, you don't want to put yourself in risk of getting injured and all those other things that play into it. Great. Look, if there was someone else on your team that was, let's say, more of a climber and he's in the break, yes, come back, because there's no chance you're going to win. But, you know, you as a sprinter, you're up there with some power. And there was a chance, and that didn't happen, but
yeah.
Tyler Williams, I think, won that day.
He did, yeah. He went early. I was boxed in, and that was that. But I take second. Hey, sitting on the breakaway, too, even if you're a smaller a climber, let's say.
It's a lot of work.
Sitting on the break is a lot of work, and it's also very discouraging for the breakaway riders. So there's a lot to be said for if you're carrying around dead weight in a breakaway, people are much less likely to continue being motivated to extend their lead and from the breakaway.
Right. Now, I just want to real quick, we'll talk about two other ones. And because your videos are cool and I really enjoy them. The Land Park, you got into a break and Cliff Bar Guy was up there. I think Matt Chat was up there again. Crichton Gruber. Then you guys lapped some guys and they jumped in with you and there was some, they were helping out and you flashed up the rule even to be.
I did, yeah.
Which is good. Now, my question was going to be, what about if the you want to just break that down real quick as to let everybody know kind of what happened there and your contention with what took place?
It was a while ago. I remember because the specific language of the rule is important in this case. But what happened was we're in a criterium and I'm in the lead group. I'm in the breakaway group and we're somewhere about halfway to lapping the field. And there was a guy who had a teammate in the breakaway with me who was dropped from the field and then infiltrated into our breakaway and then started in with this thing that I said earlier that I wouldn't do, but he started letting gaps open up. He started taking people off the back and he was just being a nuisance. And right. And Matt and I both identified that this was a problem and this was against the rules. And we waved at the official like, hey, what's going on? This guy shouldn't be here. And the official seemed unwilling to do anything about it. Turns out, I think he was unclear on what the rules were, which is a problem when the official's unclear on what the rules are.
Right.
But then after the fact, because I wasn't exactly sure either. I knew there's an obvious problem if somebody intentionally drops back. And later on, I looked up the rules. I flashed him on the screen, and he was clearly in the wrong for what he was doing, assisting a teammate after dropping back from the field. The official should have pulled him. The official shouldn't have let him infiltrate into the breakaway.
Yeah, I pulled it up here. Riders off the front of the field may not accept assistance from riders who have lost contact with the back of the field. So not
pretty
only
clear.
Is it just... Yeah, it's pretty clear. Now, what was interesting is you go, okay, so what if the situation where you lap the entire field and actually the
then you're allowed to.
On. Yeah, and the rule actually goes on to say lapped riders may rejoin and race with the field in cases where lapped riders are not being withdrawn by the officials. Now, that says field, and the other one actually says off the front. So it's specific there.
Yeah.
And look, okay, there's a rule, but then there's just bad
etiquette.
In a sense. Bad etiquette. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And that's really what it was from a rider that probably should have known better.
Well, and they insisted too, like during the race. In the moment, they insisted that, hey, they're completely within the rules. And that's what kind of put this doubt into my head. Like, oh, well, maybe they're right, you know? This feels wrong, but maybe they're right. So, and plus the official wasn't doing anything about it. So later on, I looked up the rules and you just read it. It's pretty clear to me. And I like that I stirred up some discussion about it. A little bit of controversy, too. Probably didn't make friends with those guys. But like I said earlier, you know, I mean, that's kind of the MO on my channel is like, I tell it like it is for good or for bad. And the video doesn't lie. So
no, that's what's good. I mean, yes, that was good. Then the last one we'll look at was, this was the one among me and some of my buddies that we just absolutely loved. It was the Street Fighter video.
Oh yeah, that was so fun to make.
I'm sure you got a lot of good, did you get hate for that one too?
Probably if I dig far enough in the comments, there's some hate.
Right. That's crazy. Why don't you tell everyone about that and what kind of gave you the idea to even do that?
So that was the Red Bull Bay climb. And I was on Screamin' Fitness. I had just come back from Intelligentsia Cup, which, by the way, we're going back this year with even more guys, including Bobby.
Oh, wow. When
so,
is that?
That's a 10-day stage race in Chicago. And they're just 10... Well, it's like 7 crits and 3 road races, so it's just a lot of fun. And they're all really fast.
When does that happen?
That's next month. That's in like 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just come back from that. I take a little bit of time off, and I was just like, my fitness was amazing. So I learned about this Red Bull Bay climb, and it's up in San Francisco. It's let's see if I remember. It's like half a mile, maybe? Something like that. It's really short. It's like 4 blocks or something.
All uphill.
It averages something like, I don't know, 13% or 15%. I can't remember off the top of my head. Extremely steep, like what you think of, when you think San Francisco Hills. And it's heats. You join heats and you advance, and then there's a final, and it's just A to B, right? Like first one to the top of the climb. I had fun putting that video together because it's Red Bull sponsored, so it draws a lot of really big names. And interesting course, because it's like, at face value, it's for a climber because it's up a hill, right? It must be for a climber. But on the other hand, it's like a 90-second climb, maybe even less, a 70-second climb. So I was probably way off with the half a mile. But anyway, you get the point. It's short. So it's almost good for sprinters. So I think I determined that it was probably best for like smaller track sprinters. Hmm. You just can stand up and smash the pedals all the way to the top. And I had this idea after I recorded the footage, and had this idea after I was gonna make like a Street Fighter out of it, because it just seemed like a fun theme to do. And plus I beat Guymon, which is always fun.
Yeah, no,
I don't get to race with him very often, and that's the first time I've ever got to beat him. So.
Yeah, no, it was fun to watch. So you're a sprinter. What kind of training do you do for just in general? And do you do a lot of like you have a young child now? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So has your training changed due to this?
Yes.
Are you doing more? Like I have very limited time, so I do a lot of, you know, half an hour of exactly what you're just talking, the 90-second over and over, you know, short sprints up hills.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean I'm good for if we were to do, you know, an hour and a half crit, but 60 minutes, I'm pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you changed your training due to your new lifestyle?
Yeah, definitely. I'm working with these Trainer Road guys now. They're really cool. I was on their podcast, and right. I use their product. It's been super helpful. So I have an indoor trainer now, and I use that on a fairly regular basis. I still try to ride outdoors as much as possible, but you just get so much more better bang for your buck if you have time constraints. An indoor trainer is just where it's at. It's not as fun as riding outdoors. It's not a social thing. But if you're trying to cram a 3-hour ride into 1 hour, then you jump on the trainer.
Have you recently been using that more? I mean, even during the better weather?
Well, a year ago I was zero, so it's definitely more. But yeah. I used it more in the winter months for sure. I've had it since the base season, since about the start of the year. And definitely using it more in the winter, and I use it on occasion around here if I have time constraints. It kills me a little bit when it's beautiful and 75 degrees outside to jump on the trainer, but
right,
that's the sacrifice you make to have good fitness, and sometimes I have to do that because I just don't have 3 hours to jump outside on the bike.
How much are you training a week around now?
It's like let me think. It's probably average is like 10 or 11 hours. So I got to make those count because that's not a whole lot. I know a lot of people that are Cat 1s train a lot more. But I think if you're laser focused, like I've really developed like a very laser focused plan on how to make the most out of 10 or 11 hours. Most of it, by the way, about 8 hours a week, I spend just commuting to work. So that's the lion's share of my training is just going to work and back.
That's about twice what I do. So congratulations to you. Let's talk about your cycling. So you I don't want to say finally, but you won a race.
Kind of felt like finally, though.
Well, it was your first one of the year, right?
Endless string of second places. Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a bunch of seconds, and then you followed up with a second at Brisbane. I saw as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, that video should be out in a couple of days. By the way, maybe
okay,
tomorrow.
Good. So you had a pretty good season last year. You had a bunch of seconds. Do you feel that since you finally got your win, you know, kind of mid late season, that it was not quite living up to what you wanted, or were all those seconds kind of filling in the gaps saying, I'm still close?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to be disappointed with the second place. There's a lot of really strong racers, and all the events I've been doing are the bigger local ones. So it's hard to be disappointed with the second place, but once you've had a couple of firsts, second just never feels quite right. And of course, I'm always striving to get that top step. But yeah, definitely it felt great to finally get the win at Dash for Cash, especially because I won it last year. It's cool to defend. And
Right.
And yeah, I mean, like I said, I've had a lot of really good results this year. I'm not disappointed with my results. I know the fitness is there. It just hasn't really snapped into place. And a couple weekends ago, it did for my first place. So I still have a lot of confidence coming into districts at Watsonville, which is coming up, which is a big focus for me, and also Intelligentsia, which is on the heels of that. And I just learned I'll be going out to Boise, too, so I'm looking forward to that.
So, districts are coming up. That's in Watsonville, am I correct?
Yes.
Last year it was in Davis.
Yeah.
You've done well. I think you've won Watsonville
before. I won it last year. Yeah. That's one reason why I was pretty stoked when they called that the district race this year.
Do you like that race? And what are some kind of your favorite races? Do you like crits better than the road races?
There's just a lot more crits on our calendar, and I've always been stronger in crits. I got second last year at Snelling. I've had good results in road races, but my strength lies in crits for sure. I like them technical, and if they got a bump in them or something like that, then I usually do better because I'll lose to like the pure sprinters, but I can beat the climbers. So I'm this kind of all-arounder where I'm not the best sprinter, I'm not the best climber. I'm definitely more sprinter focused. So if it's a difficult crit, I can usually position myself pretty well, and I can usually be there in the front group at the end. And if it's a difficult crit, a lot of the heavier track guys, the pure sprinter guys aren't there. And that's when I can usually take a win down.
So describe, what is Watsonville? Because I have not done that race. I understand it's got a little bit of a pitch to it. Am I thinking of a different one?
Okay. No, it does. You're right. It does. So it's, I don't even know how many corners. It's got a lot of corners. It must be a six corner crit or something like that. Yeah. And it's got a hill over the start finish, and then it's got these technical corners. It's always really windy, and it's just one of these courses. It's a really tight course too. It's probably it's less than a mile, I'm sure. So it's one of these courses. It's a lot like Brisbane, where you're either cornering, accelerating, or braking. There isn't much coasting and sitting in a draft, which is good for me because I have decent power. I have decent power to weight. My raw power is nothing to write home about, but I'm not the heaviest guy out there. So sprinting out of corners all day is it hurts, but it hurts these heavier guys a lot more.
Yeah. So, how do you see the field? Because if you're riding well, that's a technical course. You can get up front, stay there. Anybody else have you seen? Well, I just saw Justin Paulson won a race at Tour of Dairyland.
Yeah.
Is he coming back for this? I don't know.
I hope not. That'd be a good course for him. No, he's probably good at these types of courses. He's developed a lot as an athlete. I'd like to hold on to that Tri-Valley win I had last year ahead of Justin, because it might be the last time I beat Justin. Courses like Watsonville, courses like Brisbane suit guys like Justin, because like I said, he's a lighter guy. He's got really good power for his weight, and constantly accelerating doesn't bother guys like that. So I don't know if he's going to show up to districts though.
Who do you have? Is your whole team showing up? I think was Thompson in the break with Vogel last year?
At Davis, the districts last year. Districts. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has he been racing this year? I haven't seen him out as much.
Yeah, yeah. He's had a few wins early in the season.
I just missed those. I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. He's been quiet lately, so it makes sense that you'd ask that because we're wondering when he's going to come back out too. He's been a little bit quiet lately. He's always fast, though. He's a super strong guy. He won Snelling this year. He won a few other races. And I don't know if he's coming out to Watsonville. We haven't started that discussion yet as a team, but I'm sure that's going to start soon, and hopefully he comes out. I don't know if how many people we're going to have out there. Hopefully we'll have a decent squad because it's districts, right? We should have everybody's going to be there.
I have a question for you that I just was thinking of. So you put out some of these videos of your training, Alviso Criterium. Are those like a training crit or is it?
Yeah. It's a practice race and okay. It's in Alviso. It's like it's a small part of the northern part of San Jose and it's a really quiet community. It's not closed roads. I get a lot of internet
chatter.
That's what
my question was going to be. Are you required to park your car in the street on the road? There's always cars on the road there. It's
they're open roads. It's not a sanctioned race.
That's what I was wondering. If it was
not a sanctioned race, but
gotcha.
This is a very long standing group ride and it's very competitive and the community knows what time it's going on and it goes around a development which is unoccupied, so there is no traffic. I mean, you'll see occasional traffic, but it's very low traffic. If there's ever a car that's in the road that's in the way or anything like that, we're competitive, but we're not that competitive.
Right.
So it gets immediately neutralized, and we'll change the course if there's a car parked in a goofy spot. If there's anything dangerous, the community knows that we're there. There's never been any incidents in the years I've been doing it, and from the people I've talked to the years before that, even so.
No, that's pretty cool. I mean, hopefully, I don't know if they're building out more there, if that's going to be something. Growing up, racing out in Colorado and other places, we had some communities that were starting to build, and you can totally go out there and race, do a race like this, and then next thing you know, they start building up, and it's a full-on community, and you're toast, so.
Yeah, hopefully that's not the case at Alviso, but, you know, Google is buying the whole world, so eventually it's going to be a Google office, I'm sure.
That's right. So let's take a look at kind of where you're going for this season. So you said you're going out to Intelligentsia. What was that like last year? Because it looked like I think you got on the podium there. It looked like last year, and you're taking more of your teammates. Has this been kind of a big goal for you guys this year?
Well, yeah, we'd love to have results there. It's a much bigger stage. It attracts international talent. There's domestic pros that show up, and big, huge fields, the banners, you know, the gantry over the start-finish line.
Right.
And it's just a different feeling. It's like, I compare, when I try to explain it to people, I tell them, it's like, imagine San Rafael for the local riders who go out and do San Rafael Twilight Criterium. Imagine that for 10 days in a row. They're all late afternoon, twilight, people outside barbecuing, there's live music, there's food trucks, people are lining the start-finish, and it's just that magical, like that amazing feeling that you get when you cross the start finish and everyone's screaming at you and there's, you know, barbecue smoke in the air. It's just like, oh, that's just right. So magical. Like it's really fun. And, of course we'd love to have some results out there. Last year, I mean, we didn't have a great experience last year. We did, the first four races and then we all got sick. So, we missed about half of it, but, we're back this year. So I guess that's a testament to how fun the event is because, even though we didn't have a great experience last year, it was enough. Even the 4 days that we raced, it was enough to bring us back this year with even more guys.
And you're taking how many out there and you're doing the whole 10 days?
Yeah, we're doing the whole 10 days. Zach Gottsman's coming out. He's going to do, 7 days and he's going to come back for San Rafael. That's a big A race priority for him.
Right.
And, Bobby Terra's coming out and, Andrew Haslam's coming out. He's one of our younger developing riders. He's an amazing, talented climber, and this is going to be a great experience for him. He's a great crit racer, to be honest, also. So this is going to be a really good experience for him. And then Matt Meikle's coming out too. Michael.
Okay. So is it, how is that?
It's Mike.
I pronounced it Mike.
It's Michael. Yeah.
Okay. I've done that, and he actually said, "Hey, you did it right." So then I was like, "Well, maybe I wasn't," but. So that's pretty awesome. I hope you guys do well out there. Let me ask you about the state of racing in Northern California. You say you're going out there. There's, you know, barbecues and a bunch of people watching. I imagine the field size are pretty big too. You know, it looks like to me that our field sizes are getting smaller and smaller and smaller here. What's your take on if that's your perception as well? And if you think there's anything that can be done to kind of revive it?
Yeah, no, a good question. That's the million-dollar question. I mean, I wish I had an answer. I think we are at the breaking point, though. I know that I haven't dug into the numbers, but I know that this year, from what I've heard, the numbers are finally starting to rebound. So hopefully we're getting a recharge in junior cyclists, and there's more enthusiasm for the sport. So hopefully we're going to see a growth in the sport in years to come. But it's not like it was when I started in 2012, with, you know, filled up fields, 120 riders and stuff like that, and wait lists. It's just not the same enthusiasm in the most recent years.
Yeah, which is interesting. You've talked about, I heard you on the Trainer Road, that you moved up, and I looked at your results. You've moved up pretty quickly from a 5.43. And when you're doing that in fields that are 100 plus, that's pretty impressive, first of all. And how did that take? You know, I've seen guys that move up so fast that when they get up to the pro 1-2 field and then they get on a team, they have no concept of how to do team riding because they haven't had to kind of work their way through the fields, and they're really strong and you just see all kinds of chaos. Was that a problem with you, or did you just kind of develop because you had this analytical mind? So maybe that was a help.
I did struggle when I first became a 2. You know, the 2-3 field is a new thing. When I was a 2, there was no such thing as a 2-3 field. So those points were very hard to get for me to go from a 2 to a 1. I went, I think it was one season or like two half seasons or something like that, where I went from a 5 to a 2. And then I kind of sat as a 2 for a while, and I was trying to figure out how am I going to get upgrade points as a 2, because everyone seems to be faster than me. And that was true. Everyone was faster than me. So the first thing I had to do was develop my fitness and understand how to train properly. And I joined the Webcore Elite team. The last year it was an actual elite squad. And I got a lot of really proper guidance from a lot of guys who were longtime Cat Ones, who some of them were even, you know, professionals, made a living of it for a while. So I got a lot of proper guidance from guys who were on their way out of the sport when I was on my way into the sport. So that really helped me kind of wrap my head around training and strategy, because I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I think some of these guys, it made me think of this because you mentioned people that upgrade really fast and then they don't really know what they're doing. A lot of these guys that have amazing talent, like they just have this like gift when they're born that they have a crazy high VO2 max or however you want to measure it. It's almost like in the long term, it's almost like a curse, because they never forces them to really develop this other side of the sport, which I emphasize on my channel, which is strategy and position. And it's like they can just say, well, I'm just going to get to the front and I can make a bunch of mistakes and eat a bunch of wind for no reason. But my 400 watt FTP is going to save the day. And it never really teaches them to develop that skill. And if you're learning it like later on in your career, if you want to call it that, it's really hard to play catch up in that regard. And I see a lot of those guys, to answer your question from earlier, really get held up as a 2 or a 1 who they don't never get results because they haven't developed that side of their sport. And they're like, it's easy to spot them in the field. They're good wheels to follow because they will miss the break and they'll chase it and they can tow you along with them or whatever.
Right. Well, you mentioned, I just saw, and I didn't click on this, so this is kind of some speculation here, but this kid, I'm trying to remember what country he is from, the highest VO2 max, I guess, recorded, and he's bowing out of the sport because he some psychological issues. It's just not for him. And you know, you see in a massive talent that probably got him to places, and then you get so far up there that's probably not going to get you over the hump. You know, you need some of the other things to incorporate. And that kind of person probably has had it so easy that they haven't had to learn how to do other things. Or they're on a new team and now they're having to work for somebody, and that just does not work with their ego. So sometimes it's best to get those, you know, having to slave your way up and be the crafty kind of guy to get it up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of developed those two skills simultaneously because I was forced to, because I couldn't just lean on my fitness, because I didn't really have fitness. I mentioned I was a runner earlier, but I was kind of a crappy runner. Like, I was not very competitive. Part of it was injury, but part of it is because I just wasn't born with that natural talent that some riders have. And that's one of the amazing things about this sport is you don't have to be the strongest guy to win a bike race. You have to be the craftiest guy, and you have to have some level of fitness. I'll grant you that. But if you're really smart, you could be some mediocre, have some mediocre fitness and still win the bike race.
Yeah, exactly. I really appreciate you coming on today. What's your plan for any weird nuance or videos you have planned, or is you just going to continue kind of doing you're bringing your friends on? By the way, I really liked bringing Reichert in on the Chico since you didn't race there. Actually, before I go, how have you been getting, putting out a call to have Cat 5 send you videos? Seems like a really bad idea. Have you been inundated with that?
Yeah, I get a lot of footage, and I just solicited, people to send me footage on my channel. I said, hey, if you have interesting footage that you want to send my way, I'll talk about it, I'll analyze it, I'll break it down. And I just flash my email on the screen. I say, hey, send it on Google Drive and I'll take a look at it. So I get a lot of footage. I'll look at the first few minutes and get a feeling for if this is worth talking about. And then I kind of go the next step and then I look at the rest of it. And then if I still think it's worth talking about, then I'll talk about it. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I wish this existed when I was a Cat 4 or Cat 5 because, and plus it's a lot of, like, I just like getting, getting in front of the mic with Brian Larson, my frenemy, and shooting the breeze with him and talking about these races. Cause it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it looks like a good time. And Brian, does he's put the camera on his bike a few times as well?
Yeah. We got a camera for him now. I'm doing some commentary with some other folks. Andrew Gessling joined me for some commentary that, like I said, you'll see in the next couple of days from Brisbane, which is cool because he won the race. We went 1-2, so we have pretty good insight on how that race went down. And it's fun. It's a social thing, and I like reaching out to other guys in the sport and getting different takes. You hear some interesting ideas and different perspectives on how they got into the sport or their ideas on this certain race situation. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's been fun to watch as well. Well, okay. So good luck for you the rest of the season. Good luck at districts. What else you got planned for the rest of the year?
Always, I like to do Oakland and Giro to San Francisco, and. If my legs will take me that deep into the season, but I usually start to fade during Cal Cup, but I like to go out still and support some teammates. And I think the big plan now is districts and then Intelligentsia. See if we can reach the top step on like a legit pro podium in Chicago. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. Oh, you know what? You said you had a child. Now you're doing racing. How much time do you have for video production and how quickly do you get these out? How much time?
I don't have enough time.
So when you go to work, do you have a laptop? You do this on the side?
No. It's all done right here where I'm sitting right now. And, I found clever ways of pumping them out fast. And, my commentary is in just a couple of takes. And when I have somebody else on, it's in one take. Sometimes two takes. So I've just gotten better at the workflow. Because at first, it took time and the production value was really low. Now it takes a lot less time and the production value is high. So I'd like to say that I'm learning the process as I go along.
Yeah, getting efficient. By the way, I used your video for doing the overlay. So really appreciate your tech talk on that. So
cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Glad to help.
All right. Anything you want to share? Any social media stuff or where they can find you?
If you just Google or go to YouTube and check out NorCal Cycling videos, that's my channel. I have an Instagram that I kind of keep up to date, but not really. I don't have much time. You can also search for NorCal Cycling photos on Instagram. That's me. And, that's about it.
Well, thanks and good luck. And we'll see you out at the races. Once again, I appreciate you coming on the show. So everyone go out and check Jeff's YouTube channel. Give him a bunch of clicks there. I hope you're monetizing those. Are you getting some money from those?
I've monetized. Yeah. YouTube takes the lion's share of that money, but I've monetized them now.
Well, good luck. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thanks for joining us.